A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, this is Levin from The Mitch, and we recorded earlier today with Lee Tran Lam, Mitch and I. Hey, Mitch.
What's up, bro?
It's Monday when we're recording, and on the way home from recording the episode, we got the horrible news that our friend Jeremy Strode had passed away. And like, obviously, we were close with Jeremy. We were huge fans of him and his cooking. Mitch worked, had the opportunity to work with him many times, and we'll be definitely focusing, I guess, you know, a proper episode dedication to him in the future. But we thought, you know, while this news was fresh, we wanted to say a few words to put at the beginning of this episode. So, Mitch, tell me about Jeremy.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's really tragic and devastating. And, you know, my heart and my love goes out to Jane and his kids and all his family. But, you know, Jeremy was someone, is someone that the industry as a whole loves. You know, as a young chef, he was always someone that we heard about, you know, like as one of the OGs, you know, in Melbourne and in Sydney, and someone that's responsible for inspiring so many of my generation. And I've spoken to a lot of the industry today, this afternoon, after hearing the news, and all anyone can say is how amazing he was, and, you know, his food and his reputation speaks for itself. But Jeremy was someone that always had time for you and always showed that he cared, even when he didn't have to, you know. He was always so proud of what you were doing and what you were achieving, and you could see how happy that made him as well. And he always had time for you, always had advice, was always super appreciative of the respect and admiration and love that you showed to him. You know, we called him the truth, and that summed straight up. You know, he was the truth. His cooking was the truth. His personality was the truth. And, you know, he embodied some of the best things about the industry. And, you know, for a chef of that caliber to be friends with all of us young guys and to just feel like part of the family is like a pretty amazing thing. It sort of shows how humble he was and how much he loved the industry. And, you know, it's a big loss for the industry as a whole.
But he was so generous with his time. You know, if he was cooking while you were eating in his restaurant, he'd come and talk to you. He'd introduce himself to everyone you were with, and was just always so outgoing and friendly. And, you know, I saw how much you guys look up to him.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I remember, you know, he was one of like the first guests we had on the Mitch, I listened back to it today just to hear him talk. And it's funny, like, you know, we're all quite nervous just to be in his presence.
Yeah.
You know, and that episode, listening back, like he was actually, he'd just done an event for Are You Okay? And he spends a great deal of that episode talking about the importance of the mental health of chefs and people in the food industry. And I just found this, like, you know, it's absolutely devastating and really unexpected. And like you said, the heart goes out to those far closer to him than we are. And this is like, this is a loss that I think is really going to be felt. Like, I don't know anyone that could have said a bad word about Jeremy in his lifetime.
No.
And I just think, like the amount of people that this that Jeremy's passing is going to affect is enormous.
It's huge. Yeah, and you know, like obviously we don't know what demons he was battling and whatever, and you know, now he's at rest and at peace, and his family have asked that if anyone wants to show their love and support, that they donate to Are You Okay? I think there's a link in the Gourmet Traveller article in relation to Jeremy passing. So, you know, I reach out to everyone to donate a little to Are You Okay? And reach out to everyone that you know that might be going through some shit, or even if they're not, and just let them know that there's someone there to talk to, I guess. And it's tough, man. Fuck.
It's just reading the news, and I just couldn't believe it. Just like, you know, devastating is the word. And yeah, if anyone, you know, if anyone is in the industry and has thoughts that they're alone and they can't talk to people about things, like, you know, it's never the case. There's always someone there that wants to talk to you about how you're feeling, and you know, that's something that we've kind of tried to talk about on the show before.
Yeah.
And it affects a lot of people in the industry, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, I've reached out to so many people, and so many people have reached out to me, you know, so there's always someone to talk to, and even if you can't talk to someone, you know, call Are You Okay or whoever it might be, but, you know, I mean, sometimes even that's not enough, so.
Yeah.
The truth.
We'll talk about Jeremy millions of times in the future of our stupid little show, but know that, you know, he is, you know, one of the most loved chefs that's ever cooked anything in Australia, and you know, from the classic kind of, you know, classic beloved Australian kind of dishes that he did at Bistroed and all this stuff in Melbourne, right through to, like, you know, even the fish and bacon burger they did at the fish shop, which is like one of my favorite burgers of all time. Like, the dude had skills no matter what he was cooking.
Yeah. He's the truth, man. Just plain and simple.
Yeah. Well, we're missing so much. So, yeah, I mean, Jeremy and everyone close to Jeremy, everyone who loved him, who loved his food, you know, we're thinking, our thoughts are with you.
Yeah.
And on with the show. We'll talk to you again in the future.
Yeah. Thanks, bro.
Bye. It's the Mitchin
Podcast. Hey, what's up? Welcome to the Mitchin. We are a weekly food podcast. My name is Andrew Levins. My co-host, as always, Mitchell Orr.
What's up?
Hey, mate. Joining us today, a return guest for the first time in not much time, Lee Tran Lam from her podcast, The Unbearable Lightness of Being Hungry, and writing food articles for anyone who will have her.
From life in general.
From life. From life. Lee Tran Lam, welcome home.
Thanks so much.
Welcome home.
I'll just park my furniture here.
Yeah. Oh, can I reveal juicy gossip about you? You live in a one-room apartment. What's that like?
It's a studio.
Studio.
It's like living in a matchbox.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this, yeah, this all kind of.
Have you never heard of a studio apartment before, then?
I don't know anyone who lives in one.
It's Sydney. Like, that's the only kind of rent I can afford.
That's very elitist of you, though.
God damn it. I've already put myself in this hole.
Says the guy that lives out in Parramatta because he can't afford to live anywhere else.
Yeah, I know. You live in a box.
Yeah, but I live in a box with a great view.
Yeah. So on the show today, just elitist views on Australian junk food. We're going to talk about the second season of Master of None. We're going to talk about women in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And first, we're going to
where they belong.
Women in the food industry. Women in the box. We're also going to talk about right now a meal that I had last week.
So we can basically call this episode Late Pass with Levins.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I'd rather late pass than the pass. Just kidding. All food podcasts are great and equal. I want to talk about Momofuku Seobo. I finally friggin' ate there after being like teased for it by Paul Carmichael himself on the podcast.
That was like a year ago as well.
Yeah, but I made it there. It's fine. For those who don't know, it is a restaurant in Sydney that frequently is at the top of our top five lists. It was three hatted when it was before Paul took over, and then I guess Good Food took away two hats because that's like the took away a hat.
Just two hats. It's two hats.
So it's two hats now,
and it's still three star in Gourmet.
It's Gourmet Traveller's restaurant of the year past guide.
Yeah.
So people love this restaurant. Guess what, everyone? I loved this restaurant. I got a history with this restaurant too. When it opened, the first time I went was because Lee Tran gave me a voucher to eat there with my wife when we got married. So it was her wedding present to us was to eat there.
That was also about 3 years after it opened.
That's right. But apparently I went there for another tie-in. I went there and ate at the bar for your birthday, the year before that.
With Joyride.
How many years ago was that, Mitch?
That was like five, probably. Maybe even more.
I just wanted to talk about how fucking good it is. It's so fucking good.
Yeah, no shit, bro.
I know. I feel like, it's one thing to say some place is great, but there were just the entire experience is everything you want in an expensive meal.
Yeah.
The speed of it, the pacing. We talk a lot about pacing, and I feel like sometimes we'll only mention a restaurant's pacing. Your comment will just be like, "Oh, it took too long for the food for my. I was there for 4 hours.
I got sleepy, yeah,
kind of thing." But I think I went to Attica last year, fucking 10 years after it was open. the most exciting part of eating there was when they just send out this onslaught of snacks. Mm. When I say onslaught, it's like you finish eating one and there's already another one on the table. And yeah. I was like, man, this is the best pace. I don't know how to fucking say it. Momofuku in Sydney.
Yeah.
that pace is just your entire meal. And it's so... and they read you. If you're smashing it, they'll keep them coming really, really quickly. If you're taking your time, they'll pace it out a bit more. Every single person it goes to eat there for different reasons because the makeup of the crowd there, I feel like, is one of the most varied.
It's very eclectic.
You'll get people that are there because it's just a restaurant in the casino where they're spending a week at the casino and they're eating at the best place they can while they're there. You get, young people on dates that you can tell they've spent the entire year saving up for. Yeah. And then you have,
special occasion.
Yeah. And then you have just, general foodies that are checking back in with the spot. A lot of travelers. One of the dishes... It's the big kind of showy, it was like there's two pieces of beautiful pork and then you get these sides and the sommelier who's, what's his name?
Ambrose
Chiang.
So I'd never encountered him before. I think it was one of the best somm experiences I've ever had. He wasn't pushy in any way. He just would just describe stuff. He was so smiley and happy. There was no fucking snootiness about him at all, which is, that role is such a snooty kind of role. I don't know why so many young guys would carry on that element of it.
I think
I'm in my 20s. I'm going to be snooty.
I think because they have to delve so deep into it and they sort of get lost.
Yeah, you get lost in the snootiness.
Yeah, you get lost in the sauce, so to speak. So, yeah, I don't know. But Ambrose is very laid back. He's a professional, but he cares about the whole experience. And... it's not just about what he wants you to drink. It's about what you want to drink.
Well, and that's the thing. So, all the drink pairings, up to this course are quite, they're varied. At one point, you're drinking a Brian wine.
Yeah.
Mike Benny's wine, which was great. And, some wines from all over the world, a great sake. And then when the main course comes out, he's like, this is your main course. What do you want to drink? And I loved this because not only was I able to say what I liked and let him just kind of choose a bunch of shit for me, he ended up bringing me three drinks. So I had two glasses of wine and a gin and tonic for some reason. The restaurant's so varied, you have so many different people there, and that was never more evident than when you ask every single person, hey, what do you want to drink right now? And so you have this incredibly different... people are drinking these big hearty reds.
Yeah.
Other people were drinking spirits. It was just really cool. Really cool thing to see. And I think one of those, people always talk about restaurant experiences trying to be interactive. And I think this was a really effortless way to be so interactive and make you think about what you're about to have with your meal.
I think another thing worth pointing out with Mama Fukusiebo is they were the first restaurant in Australia to do a juice pairing or a non-alcoholic match, which comes from, I think, Clayton Wells and Ben Greeno, who used to be there. They were at Noma and they have a non-alcoholic drinks program there as well. And what Ambrose does with it at Siebo is like really fascinating and interesting. Like he'll take French Earl Grey tea and he'll freeze it and then like melt it down and then spike it with French Earl Grey caramel and be like this delicious drink. Or he'll like hand crush, I don't know, 6 kilos of berries and then add like some vinegar from Normandy and then turn that into something that he serves with, you know, soda on the rocks. And what he does with booze and non-booze is as well thought out and interesting.
Also, he looks like he's 18.
Yeah, he's pretty young.
Really, really impressive.
But Ambrose has also been there from the start.
Right.
Ambrose has been there since worked under Rich, and when Rich left, Ambrose stepped up and took it over.
Yeah, right, cool. Yeah. No, so it was like, I mean, I shouldn't only speak about wine. Like, the food is phenomenal. Like, Paul Carmichael's palate for, and I, you know, a lot of people, we spoke about how odd it was that Pete Wells focused on Mama Fukusiebo as an Australian restaurant because, you know, his cooking is anything but. But I definitely, like, you know, in his choice of, like, you know, the fact that you're eating marin with the Caribbean flavors and stuff like that.
I think it's a very Australian
restaurant. I really did too.
Yeah. I think it's a very Australian restaurant.
And, man, there was not one... Actually, there was one course I didn't like, but I think you're kind of not meant to like it. The black bitch, that final dessert. It's got a black bee, ..
I don't know if I had that.
Did you have that? It's like these
I've
two,
only
like,
eaten at the bar.
It's like these two licorice-y pearls. And it's like, it's based on, like, a candy that he had growing up. And it's, like, it's super intense. It's a cool way to end the meal, but it wasn't... I was like, oh, could have not eaten that and also been happy.
Yeah.
That's, like, the closest thing to criticism I have towards. It was such a great night. Services... is spectacular and like just it was just a it when it opened I feel like they you know I love Greeno's food, I love Clayton's food, but the atmosphere in there I felt like they had so much to prove, and now it just feels like they're just so comfortable.
It's very fun.
Yeah, it was really, really fun.
When I interviewed Ben Greeno for my podcast, he said one of the reasons he ended up leaving was because when they started out was fun, but then all the accolades came in and then the people who started to go were just really different to the people who started going in the beginning, who just wanted a good time. So it's interesting to see that it's done another.
That happens at every restaurant. Like, the more successful you get, like, if you go from one hat to two hat, you see a change in your clientele because people come and they think, oh, well, that's a two hat restaurant. So it sort of knocks people out of a different, you know, they go, oh, that might be not what we want because it's two hats now. And so it attracts a different clientele, and that clientele then comes in with all these different expectations of what your restaurant should be because it's rated at whatever point it's rated at. And like it happened with Esther and that kind of thing. So yeah, it's interesting to hear that, but that's part of the game. And I guess you've still got to just keep doing what you do that got you to that point anyway, because you can't go and change the whole thing just because you got an accolade, you know?
Yeah, totally. So I'm very curious because, Litran, you're vegetarian. the way I describe my meal, do you feel the same way? Like, because I feel like there was maybe one vegetarian course that I ate over the course of the night.
So I've only eaten at the bar.
Right.
And I have to say, we got treated so well. It didn't feel like, oh, you're just eating at the bar. Like, it would be up there with, like, one of the best meals I had last year. And in my head, it's a bit of a blur because I went in December, but everything was like to the max with flavor, like either like really buttery or really I think there was one dish with like a macadamia milk, and there was another dish where maybe they like charred cos lettuce, so they really like pushed the flavors, but not just in that way where you just like burn the shit out of everything or you caramelize the shit out of everything, but like adding a bit of, I don't know, grapefruit to this to really bring out the zest in this part of the dish. So I felt like it was like up to 11 in terms of flavor. I didn't feel like, oh, you know, just another afterthought.
You didn't bring out like a Caribbean risotto.
I don't know if I should mention this, but I did go to a restaurant recently and I did email them and ask them if they had veggie dishes, and I put I was a vegetarian in the booking, and when I turned up it was still a bit like, oh, you can have like the greens. So it was not that experience. It was definitely the opposite of that experience.
Yeah.
That stinks. Yeah, well, I mean, all I can think of now is the like a military snail dish.
Yeah.
That I think it was like right in front of me, and I was like, another one of those, please.
That's like the first mouthful you get.
Like, well, yeah, second, I think. Yeah. It was, man, and it definitely got better from there, but that was a spectacular start. There's so many great, cool tastes, and I agree with you. Like, there is a lot of Australia in his menu.
Yeah.
That the kingfish head, did you get that?
Yeah.
Just covered in like
hot sauce.
Like, just plastered in this hot sauce, which is more about the vinegar and the peppers rather than the heat.
Yeah.
It's so good. Anyway, highly recommended. Obviously, you don't need us to tell you to go there. It's one of the best in Sydney.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Congrats for making it, bro.
Thank you so much, bro.
Congrats for having a birthday to make you go.
So, let's talk about Australian junk food. Good Food put out a pretty fun article last week that I'm...
I saw it, but I didn't read it. But I wanted to talk about...
Yeah, good. Awesome. Yeah. Lucky we have a podcast, man.
I know, lucky.
This is written by Joel Bearden. He does top 10 Australian junk foods. And I won't read the entire article. I'll just go through their top 10 and we can work out if there's anything that's dangerously missing.
Okay.
All right. So, vanilla slice.
Yeah, sure.
I fucking hate vanilla slice
when I was young.
Yeah, not a fan.
But it's always everywhere.
Yeah.
So, it is iconic.
My father-in-law went for a brunch at their place and he brought out the vanilla slice slabs. He goes, I'll warm them up on the bench. I'm like, oh man, he's gonna eat this anyway. Golden Gay Time.
Yeah.
Fucking oath.
Yeah. That should be number one.
Yeah. I mean, it's not really numbered, it's just a list.
Yeah, that's number one.
Gay Time. Heart. Sausage Sizzle.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Shapes.
Yeah, I fuck with shapes, yeah.
Okay, cool. Meat pie.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is a meat pie and sausage sizzle really junk food though?
That's what I was thinking.
It's not really junk food.
It's certainly, yeah.
There's some sort of nutritional value there.
Yeah. A Neenish tart,
no idea what that is.
That's the black and white iced
black
tart.
Black and white cookie?
With like fake cream in the middle.
No.
I hate that thing.
Yeah.
No. I was always like it's like the suburban bakery, you see the Neenish tarts. And then there was always those weird green frogs. Like they're like the size of a cupcake and they're a green frog with like two brown chocolate eyes. And then it's like this pinkish cream in the middle of them. And they cut a wedge into its mouth so you can see like the green icing and then the pink in the middle. From its mouth. You know what I'm talking about?
Never seen that before in my life.
They're all over suburban. No, anyway. Yeah. Milo.
Yep.
Passiona.
I prefer Pasito, but sure.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought that was like a known thing. Everyone preferred Pasito,
man.
Oh.
Passiona, please.
Also, I learned from this article that it's not pronounced Passiona. It's Pashona.
No, that's wrong. It should be Passiona.
And a Chico roll.
Yeah. I've never really eaten a Chico roll.
No,
but again, it's everywhere and it's pretty iconic.
Oh, I thought like if you got sausage sizzle, you got meat pie. Like the junk food version of both of those things and a Chico roll is just a sausage roll, right?
Yeah.
That's way more like...
There's no sausage roll?
No.
Oh, that's...
Cheezels? Cheezels is 10.
I prefer tubes.
Or
burger rings. Tubes are better than cheezels, but I think like burger rings is a bit more iconic.
Yeah. Cheezels, I just remember when I was a kid putting them all on my fingers.
Yeah. Tubes.
And if you did it with tubes, the tubes would like burn your fingers. All the weird shit on them.
So the reason I saw Milo was in this, and like the night before I was having a glass of Milo at home, and I started writing a Facebook status like as basically like a fuck you to my mum for only ever letting me have 2 teaspoons of Milo. And now I just like fucking heap it up. Like it's like 10 teaspoons. So it's like half Milo, half milk, but I couldn't get the wording right. And then the next day I saw it came out. I was like, damn it.
What's wrong with that?
Oh, I was just like, I should have been more, like I should have got the wording right. I could have been really relevant. But every time I have a Milo, I'm just like, fuck you, mum. 7.
How do you Milo? Do you like? I used to you put the 2 spoons down the bottom, then you get a little bit of hot water and you mix it up.
What?
Yeah, man, you make a little hot, and then and then it combines with the milk better.
No.
And then you put another one on top, so then you have the crunchy stuff.
No. 10 in, milk in.
10 in.
stir straight away, and then you got to eat it straight away, so you get all the crunchiness and the goodness. Because if you let it sit, then it goes like not crunchy and no good.
Right.
Yeah, and then the milk's super chocolatey anyway because you got so much fucking Milo in there.
Lee Tran, your thoughts?
I was more the Levens method.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, because you need a little
heat.
That's crazy. Yeah. What are you?
You never heard of that?
So it's like a hot Milo.
No. Just a tiny bit of hot water, like a few drops, and then it melts.
Just
all
put
the
more
Milo.
Fucking Milo in there.
Then you get like a deep, rich chocolate in your, and then you get the extra crunch on top.
I don't know.
Yeah. About that. All right. So some junk food that I think is missing: cheese sticks,
like.
Those Kraft weird, disgusting sticks. Kraft cheese sticks.
Yeah,
or singles.
Yeah.
The Kraft singles.
Yeah, or Laughing Cow.
Yeah, no. Nah. Oh, yeah, craft like, singles, craft singles. I'll give you craft singles.
That's way more like, you
yeah.
know, like shitty white yeah. Aussie. yeah. You're like, you're too much culture to this, Leech.
A bit fancy.
Sorry.
Yeah, craft singles, yeah.
Well, what about Baby Bells? Those, I don't the know whack, Baby the, wax, the red wax-covered
that's
cheese ball.
That's more fancy than Laughing fancy. Cow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The snooty one.
2 minute noodles.
2 minute noodles?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. The
slash meagering, but I think it should be Maggi if it's Australian.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're just doing now shitty white suburbia.
Yeah.
Actually, this is interesting because that's where my mind went to as well. And I feel like we should try and get away from this shit, like that Australian junk food. Because
But I guess that's what you grew up with. And it's like if you went to school, that shit's all in the canteen.
Where's Le Snacks at then?
Yeah, Le Snacks should be on there. Yeah, that's a good one.
Put Le Snack on
there. Yeah, Le Snack's good. What else you got?
I don't think it's about it. Okay. It's good.
What about you, Lee Tran?
Oh.
Do you have that embarrassing, like, you know, like my Bianca, my wife, always talks about that she had the most boring lunchbox ever because her mum, who came over from Portugal, got teased when she was a kid because she always had like weird shit.
Yeah.
Like, you know, aka good shit.
Good shit.
In her lunchbox. So B just grew up with like peanut butter sandwiches and Smith's crisps.
So I had like two phases where the first primary school I went to, super multicultural in Cabramatta. So no one's going to tease anyone, right? Mm-hmm. And then the second one I went to was in Haberfield. And I was like one of three Asian kids in the entire school. But my dad owned the local corner store. And so I just ate a lot of junk that we sold.
So you should be the expert on this article.
And also, this is hilarious because I'm a vegetarian now, but every day I would make a fried onion and bacon toasted cheese sandwich to take to school.
Sick.
That's sick. That's a good one.
What's so like regular day. Fried onions.
You'd make it at home or you go to the corner shop and make it at the corner
I'd
shop?
I'd make it at home and I'd take it and it'd be like slightly soggy, but you're in year six. You don't care that much. I don't know how I didn't have a heart attack at the age of 12.
How are hot chips and chicken salt not on there?
And then I just realized like lollies in general. There's no lollies on that list.
Like red frogs.
Or strawberries and creams.
Yeah, strawberries and creams. Yeah.
Pineapple chunks.
Oh, fuck. I love pineapple chunks. They're more New Zealand though. I think they're a New Zealand.
Yeah. Pineapple chunks.
We stole them. We did Crowded House.
Lamington.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a million fucking things.
Anyway, more candy. Red clouds. Gummy ears.
I don't know what a red cloud is.
You don't need to
teeth.
Sugar.
I used to like teeth.
Oh yeah. Teeth are pretty bad.
Is Violet Crumble Australian?
I don't know.
I think it might be. I don't feel like I've ever seen it anywhere else.
You're a Violet Crumble over crunchy guy, aren't you? Fuck
no, I think I like
you're crunchy. Yeah, bro. Back in the crew.
Twix is the only real chocolate bar.
Oh, Twix is so good.
Twix is number one.
And you're a chomp boy too, right?
Yeah, I don't mind a chomp. Yeah. Twix is number one.
What was like, okay, I've never realized that your dad owned a corner store. Did you get to the point where you took junk food for granted or was it just always fucking there and you loved it?
Yeah, so I would go through phases. There was a phase where I ate, there was a Mars bar ice cream. Mm. Oh, no, Snickers bar ice cream.
You can still get them both. Yeah, yep. But I was a big deal when you can get chocolate bar ice creams in
corner shop.
In freezers.
They were the expensive $2 kinds.
Yeah, totally.
So I would eat one every single day. I would eat a lot of pineapple chunks. Now that I think about it, I had the worst diet for a child.
The best ice cream was the Maxi Bon cookie.
Oh, I remember that,
yeah. But that didn't last long, but fuck, that was good. Bubble right. Bills. How's Bubble Bill not on there?
Yeah. Crunchy ice cream was really good too. That was a big deal. And you get a picnic ice cream as well.
Yeah.
Bring them all back, corporations. Bring them all back for us.
For us to not buy them ever.
Yeah. but for good food to make listicles about them. 10 ice creams that need to come back. I'm going to pitch that.
That
was like my favorite article I've ever written was about the best ice creams of the summer 2015. Yeah. I'll do 10 ice creams that need to come back. I mean, that's more BuzzFeed than good food. Yeah. But fuck it, good food delve into that well sometimes. Yeah. So do you guys want to talk about Master of None or do you want to talk about Lauren Eldridge's article in Good Food today?
Let's do Lauren's first.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Lauren Eldridge is a previous guest on the podcast. She was the pastry chef at Marc for quite a few years. And during that time, she won the Josephine Pignolet Young Chef of the Year Award. We had her on the podcast shortly after that. So it was 2 years ago-ish. Probably
it's been that long?
Yeah,
exactly 2 years ago.
Fucking hell.
And She's awesome. Like, I'm a big fan of her. She kind of made an appearance on the podcast at one of our Rootstock episodes as well, I think. And she's done many other things besides being on our podcast as well. She wrote a really great article that was out in Good Food today. We're only doing Good Food articles today. Basically kind of responding to not so much the fact that there was one female chef that had been... Only one of the chefs was a girl.
She was responding to the backlash.
That's right. So of all the nominations for this year's Josephine Pignolet Awards, and they're national now, only one of the chefs was a girl.
And that was Kylie Miller from Attica.
That's right. A big deal was made of that. And every time that she was mentioned, it would bring up that she was the only girl who was nominated. And so she wasn't so much the article which is up today, which is called... former Josephine Pignolet Award winner returns her volleys. It's basically saying, like, you know, almost about the way it was talked about, less than it was about the fact that there was only one girl nominated.
Yeah, it's a really good written article, and it's kind of lucky that we got a woman here to speak about it as well. So it's two middle-aged white guys talking, but I
want to get Lauren on next week.
It's also pretty much the opinion that I hear talking to female chefs or talking to females in the industry, and I agree with it. Like, why do they need to be identified as female chefs, and why are they not identified by the things they've achieved or done in their career the same as male chefs are, which is what Lauren says, and it's pretty much what every female chef says. And every time a female chef has to do an interview or something like that, and they get, what's it like to be a female in the industry, what's this and that.
And it's obviously, it's not just chefs, but it is particularly prevalent in the food world.
From speaking from where we are, course, and what we see and who I talk to. And they fucking hate it. And it's like, what are they supposed to do? Do they steer that question in another direction? Do they ignore that question? And then, you know, are they getting asked? Are they only getting interviewed because they're a female and the publication has decided they need to have a female and it's not based on, you know, like... all that kind of thing. So,
yeah, it's a hard subject to broach. I mean, and feel free to butt in at any point instead of us fumbling over it like we do every week. But like with this podcast, like, you know, I look back and of the episodes we've done, and I see how much men outnumber women just on this podcast alone. And that's with me and Mitch going, like, we can't keep only having guys, it's difficult. And I know this is a fucking... It's a lame complaint from our end because, you know, it's considerably easier for us to get more women on than it is for a woman to, you know, work her way up the industry.
Yeah.
But, you know, even... It is a noticeable thing. Like, it's still a very male-dominated space.
Yeah, I remember interviewing Chewy Lee Look, who used to run Claude's, and she had the Chow Eating Bar in Surry Hills. And I remember talking to her about this on my podcast where I cited a statistic, and this was for America, but it's probably similar for Australia, where you're more likely to find a female CEO than a female head chef. Like, that's how skewed it is gender-wise. And I definitely find with my own podcast, I'm very wary that, you know, previous to the one I did recently with Nikki Toe, I had done like 4 guys in a row. And it's not like...
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news?
right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
I want to have some system where I'm like, I'm only going to talk to this person because she's a woman. Yeah. Like, it has to be someone interesting. But I'm still wary that I want it to be a fairly diverse podcast. But I have the same problem with you guys that, you know, there are a lot more dudes in the industry.
It's a ratio thing, yeah. And I guess we have to talk to Lauren or we ask Danielle or whoever if why that is, because I don't, again, I can only speak from my point of view, and it's a stupid point of view because I'm a white middle-aged male, but I don't like...
You just play golf today.
I love having women in the kitchen, and I love having women in the restaurant in general, and they're usually much more... They're usually easier to work with, less arrogant, less fucking headstrong, and in the stupid way of being headstrong, and, you know, that kind of thing, and they make the place a better place to work. And I don't think I've ever seen anyone that I've worked for discriminate against that. Like, most kitchens I've been in have had women in them, and the floor teams have been, you know, an even split at least. So I don't know why it is. And I don't, like, especially now, I think with the changes in the industry, I don't think there's anyone out there going, I'm not going to hire a woman to be in the kitchen. But again, like, I can't really say, so we'll have to ask a few more of the women chef that we're lucky enough to know.
Well, I found that the first few female chefs I interviewed for my podcast, and I'm just identifying them as female chefs.
I hate the word female. I hate it. It's it seems like a female is like a word that people who have never talked to a woman use to describe them.
But just in terms of like answering this question, and I was like torn, like, do I ask them this question or not? And I thought, look, I kind of have to because it is a thing, but I didn't want it to be the only thing I talk about it. So it's maybe one question out of like 30 that I ask. And when I interviewed Annalise Gregory, who you used to work with, like, she was the best interview I've ever done in my entire life. And afterwards, I said how much I enjoyed talking with her because she's done all this amazing stuff in Spain and in France and here in Australia. And she said, you know, it was nice to be interviewed and not just asked, what is it like to be a woman in the industry? I still asked her that question, but
it's not the whole makeup. Yeah. And that's the problem, I think. And that's something Annalise would say, is like, I've got this interview again, and it's these same fucking five questions over and over and over again, no matter who it's from, you know? So, like Lauren said, like, I think Lauren said, it's a bit of a media issue, you know?
Yeah.
It's not an issue in the industry, it's an issue in the media, so...
I think it's not just the media, because when I went to that World's 50 Best Talks thing that happened at the Opera House, one of the questions was this dude who got up, and as soon as he said it, we all were like dying inside, where he said to Dominic Crenn, who recently won, what, Best Female Chef in the World's 50 Best Awards, he basically said to her, why aren't you a mother? Because that's basically the most important job there is.
Wasn't it like, do you have any regrets that you didn't decide to be a mother instead of a chef?
Yeah, and the implication, like, he didn't say in literal, he didn't say in the literal words, but his implication was the most important job you can have is being a mother.
Yeah.
And she answered it so well, and she said, like, how do you know I'm not? Because actually I am. Yeah. I've got like twins, but she just chose not to publicize it. And I can understand that, because then it becomes
about,
how do you balance it, you know? And but you know what I thought was amazing? She answered it in such an articulate, funny way where she didn't make him feel bad about asking such an arrogant
Didn't she make him repeat it first?
She was like, I'd like you to ask that question again. But she could have been like, she could have handed him his ass on a plate. And I feel like the kind of shitty thing is, and I think any woman has been in this situation where someone's been a dick and you have to kind of make it okay for them that they've been a dick. And you kind of have to point out they have been a dick, but you can't be a jerk about pointing about out that it, they've yeah. been a dick. Like, that's the tricky yeah. thing about being a woman, right? Like, yeah. you... And the thing about all these articles is all these women are expected to explain why this is a problem and how they're single-handedly meant to solve it.
Yeah.
And it's like, should they really? Is it really
yeah.
their fault?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, like a good friend of ours, Nina Las Vegas, who's a DJ, like just refuses to answer those questions now when she gets yeah. asked them. Like, yeah. you know, what's it like being a woman in the music industry? She's just like, fuck off. No, like she did a big spiel in for like a pretty high like billboard or something
yeah.
like that
yeah.
saying like just don't ask me these questions anymore yeah. I'm done.
And it is a big problem in the music space too. You constantly see like our DJ friends who are women say, you know, like, oh, everyone's talking about how we're promoting women in the industry and la la la, but now you put out another lineup that's all dudes, or yeah. you make a big deal about, hey, we're gonna have a women's
lineup. Only stage.
Why? Just yeah. fucking put them on
exactly.
the event, you know?
Yeah, yeah, don't yeah. make me think. Same as like I my other podcast, Hey Fam, we did an interview with a games maker from, she's like grew up in Cabramatta and now lives in UK. Her name's like Siobhan Reddy, and she does like Little Big Planet and all the Media Molecule games.
I have no idea what any of those yeah. things are.
It's a good game. She was out here and we did a half hour episode with her and it finished and she was like, oh my God, it was the end of her day. We're at the PlayStation offices. And she was like, that was easily the best interview we did all day. And I was like, oh yeah, because I was gonna lead with like, what's it like being a woman in the games industry, and like as a joke, and she was like, that's how every single interview started. I did today began. Yeah. I was like, oh fuck, I was just joking. So it's like, yeah, it's clear. Unfortunately, I feel like it's everything. Like, I'm a DJ who does games journalism and food journalism,
and it's all
and
across
it's
the
all
scene.
It's yeah. that problem is part of all of it. And I it's one of those things where I wish I could do more, and I probably can, so I suck.
Yeah. Tell us what we can do.
Yeah, yeah.
We're here to be allies. You know?
Yeah, totally.
I think just profiling women because they're really good at what they do and
yeah,
asking
100%.
Them about
yeah.
other shit is one step forward.
And yeah, totally.
I don't think anybody wants recognition just because of their gender.
Or you know yeah, I mean? Yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, they all want the recognition because they've earned it.
Yeah.
Like, everybody. You know, you don't want something that you haven't earned, and you don't want something handed to you just because of something you happen to be that's unrelated to what you do.
So do we need to, like, say goodbye to these articles that are like, you know, here are five female chefs in the industry who are really ripping it up?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Or is there some good that comes from them for highlighting?
Yeah, I have such mixed feelings about this because the problem doesn't go away if we just pretend it doesn't exist yeah. as well. So I feel like it's a really complicated debate, and we just can't have the cliche of asking these women. Yeah, you know, I work like in journalism. It's a lot, especially in magazines, which is mainly my background. Most of the workforce is women, and we're never asked why aren't there more dudes in the industry.
Well, you never hear. I mean, you've probably never been described as a female writer.
Yeah, rarely. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, very rarely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Lee, your last podcast with Nikki too did make me go, fuck, maybe we're not looking wide enough. Because
yeah.
I've known Nikki for a long time, and I think Nikki's amazing, and she would be a great person to have on because she pays attention. She's constantly in different establishments.
She's an establishment that we need to ask.
I was like, fuck, why haven't we thought of Nikki or this person or that person?
Well, one of my favorite podcasts that I listened to in the last year is your episode of Unbearable Lightness with Helen Greenwood from Grab Your Fork.
Helen Yee, sorry.
Thank you. Easy to say. Thank you. Helen Yee from Grab Your Fork. Who, you know, she's been a blogger, like, you know, started out as a blogger like you. And it was just like this great kind of chat about, you know, blogging through the ages and the two of you. And I was like, I've wanted to get Helen on since
yeah,
then.
Sure.
I actually
yeah.
asked that if she could do today as well, but just to repeat your episode with him again. But
well, to be honest, like what you said, Mitch, like to try and get more women on my podcast, I've kind of had to do it by thinking outside
the box, yeah.
I can't just ask female chefs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And if this is like a tiny, like, you know, like, not really that important, but, like, you know, while there are more men on this podcast as guests, there are way more men who I will never have on this podcast as guests. I don't know if that's some kind of consolation prize.
No, it's just because there's more dickheads.
That's right. So yeah, look, I hope Lauren is Lauren's moving to Melbourne. She's setting up some stuff in Melbourne this week, and hopefully we'll be back next week in time to do the show with us then. So hopefully we can hear more from Lauren Eldridge very soon. She's awesome. Let's talk about Master of None season two.
Yeah.
Old Andrew Late Past Levins finally finished that season last night. I watched about 100 other TV series. I put on the back burner. So, Lichan, I've spoken to you about this series after the first season came out. This is a series on Netflix created by Aziz Ansari and Alan Yang. Aziz plays the character of...
Dev.
Which is, like, you know, loosely just kind of based on Aziz.
It's just him, yeah.
But then there are moments where I think that's problematic, which we can address later on in the episode. After the first season came out, you came on my my other podcast, Hey Fam, and we did like the best TV shows of the year. And you and I were very pro that show. Another guest of a friend of ours, Matt Roden, who was extremely against it.
Really? I liked season one was great too.
Season one is good.
I ride for it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's very much about, like, you know, I guess at its core, the series is about living in New York and having relationships in New York. And I think that season did a great job of saying what it's like to fall in love with someone. I really loved those episodes. And then the kind of undertone of it is that Aziz's character, Dev, loves pasta. And at the very end of the first season, he leaves for Italy to learn how to make pasta. And so this season catches up with him in Italy. Like, we actually get two episodes in Italy of him, what his life's been like.
I like this season more because Levs and I were talking about it last night, and Levs was like, oh, season one's so good. It's like about falling in love. And I was like, yeah, that's because you've been in a monogamous relationship for 10 years, bro. Like, you've got nothing else to relate to. And I was like, I thought that was gross. And I thought it was gross and boring, you know, but season two is so cool because we have mutual friends who know Aziz. So you sort of hear about how much he loves food, and we know Eric and how much Eric loves eating and all that kind of stuff. So to see that come through in a show, like, season two is so relatable to me, even though it's based in New York and, you know, like the Tinder dating and just going out to eat or going to a bar and meeting your friends to this thing and going and like going somewhere to eat something is like so relatable.
Mm.
To my day-to-day life, you know, so, like, it's really good.
I liked that. One of the things I liked about this season was that food took a much further, bigger step forward.
It's a prominent thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you know, quite explicitly, because the first episode is he's in Modena in Italy. He's learning to make pasta there. And the second episode, he's fed by Massimo Bottura. And apparently, when Massimo Bottura heard that Aziz Ansari was filming in Modena, he was like, I have to have him in the restaurant. Mm. So I assume that Aziz filmed there so he could just get into Osteria Francescana, but it was actually the other way around. Massimo Bottura, like, courted him. And that's why in the scene they're eating in the wine room, because there was nowhere to film because the restaurant was already booked out.
Yeah, I loved that scene. That was really fun. And at one point in this season, we're going to go full spoilers on Master of None season two, by the way, because I really want to talk about it in depth.
It's been out.
It's heaps old. If you haven't watched it by now, like, you're a fucking idiot. Yeah. If you hadn't watched it yesterday, it's fine. But now, you're a fucking idiot. Yeah. I later in the season, Aziz he becomes the host of a cupcake show, which I thought was really well
cupcake
put together.
Challenge. Yeah.
It was completely like what you expect from a shitty reality TV show about a cupcake contest.
Yeah.
But then he pitches this completely unearned travel show with this
Chef Jeff.
Yeah, which is very much. And I read an article in which they deny this, but, like, there is no way it's... what's his name?
It's not Bourdain.
It's Anthony Bourdain, but it's played by...
Bobby Cannavale.
Yeah,
that's right, Cannavale. Doing a very good Bourdain impression.
And he ends up being, like, a real creep who has, like, multiple cases of sexual harassment about... And I was like, fuck, imagine what Bourdain thinks of this. Yeah, but I would much rather watch the show. I would actually love to see a show of Eric Wareheim eating his way through fancy restaurants. And I think that was something that they tried to do years ago. There's like photos of Eric Wareheim, Aziz Ansari, and Jason Wallner, who did all the Human Giant stuff, which is Aziz's sketch group. And I think he directed a bunch of other movies and stuff since then. But I think they tried to do like a travel eating show. And then he did that. Wasn't he him in... James Murphy sent to Tokyo to do a...
With David Chang, like on Twitter. He's like, hey, can someone send us to Japan and GQ magazine? Like, yeah, cool, we'll do it. And they did.
Just for an article or something?
Yeah, just for an article. Well,
because so with this one, right, there's a really good podcast with Aziz on the Bill Simmons podcast. And they talk about Master of None. And Aziz actually did go and live in Modena for 3 months and learn Italian and all that kind of thing. And after this season wrapped, he went and did that in Tokyo.
Really?
So season 3 might be Tokyo version.
Well, yeah, right. My joke was that the next Tourism Australia campaign should be trying to get Master of None shot in Australia. Yeah, yeah.
That would be the worst season, though.
No, it would be fucking sick.
He'd go to Acme.
He would get real dark.
This is so funny, man.
When I had like a... He came to the dip when he was last here, the Opera House, and had like a long conversation. Like I was just like, hey man, what's up, thanks for coming through. And he like had a long conversation about how lonely it is traveling and stuff like that, and I feel like that really he's also written articles about how he doesn't believe in love in our generation, and like how he thinks his parents arranged marriage makes more sense than the way most of us treat relationships. So yeah, I think our outlooks, like my personal outlook on, like, you know, I'm a big believer in love, and I'm not a lonely dude. Whereas I think, yeah, like I think my problems with the series just stem from very different outlooks on that particular aspect of life.
Like so all the things that you didn't like because you can't relate to them, I liked.
I know, it wasn't that I couldn't relate to them. I just, like, I see a lot of Aziz himself in Dev, and so knowing that he wrote this series in which he's put in a position that he's trying to win over a girl who is engaged to someone that he met in Italy, and then it ends with him claiming that she used him. I just thought that was so gross.
That part was a bit, yeah.
Okay, so I have a different...
I didn't like that part, yeah.
I have a different take on this, right? So I feel like the whole season is about whether you should have what you want, right?
Sure.
And we've seen a lot of it backfire, like when Eric Wareheim's character goes to the wedding of his ex-girlfriend and everyone's like, don't...
With the melon? That's I love that.
and don't...
He
everyone's
just
like,
shreds the new husband. You're like a B-grade.
Yeah,
it's so good.
Everyone's like, don't declare that you're still in love with her. That's a bad idea. But of course he does. And with... what's her name? Is it Francesca?
Francesca.
Yeah, Francesca. She's engaged to a guy who's like pretty boring, right? That she thought was going to be her future. And it makes sense for them to be together. And everything about her life is really embedded in family. Whereas Dev can do whatever he wants. If he wants to eat bacon, he's going to eat bacon. Doesn't matter if his parents are Muslim. So I think it's interesting that she questions, should she actually have what she wants, which is this relationship with Dev, or running to New York and having this fun life. Whereas for Dev, the only thing that kind of held him back was like, oh, she's with another guy. It's a bit, you know, questionable. But I think, you know, she, for him, like, she was hands off, but she sees him as freedom, and she did kind of like, she did flirt with him. Come on. Like,
she encouraged, but for Dev to say that he was being used. Yeah, I didn't like that either. It's like,
yeah.
But that's also like you get stuck in your emotions and you think this, and then you don't get what you want. So you have this overreaction.
Tantrum.
That is a tantrum, and you say all this shit because you're emotional and it's not logical and all of that. But I was like, nah, come on, Dev.
Yeah. But I mean, when I was on your show, Hey Fam, Matt Roden's like, oh, the problem with Master of None is like...
He's an okay guy. You gotta give him that voice.
Keep going. I like it. I'm into it.
The problem with Master of None is like, Dev is just like a perfect character. He's just like so perfect. So, like...
No, he's super flawed.
Yeah, he has a lot of super flaws. Flawed. So, I was sympathetic to his point of view, even though I thought they shouldn't get back. I just thought they shouldn't get together because what is so interesting about their relationship is that they're not
the forbiddenness
together.
And yeah,
for me,
the
tension. That was the weakest part of this season for me. Like there were the middle like 5 episodes I thought were awesome, like the best that he's done. I loved that episode that he wasn't even fucking in. That was like incredible.
Death Castle
one where you have really like good. 3 different groups of people that it's kind of follows the The deaf supermarket worker, the guy working in
the taxi driver,
and they got real taxi drivers.
So good.
And the guy working in the foyer of the hotel, the concierge. I loved that episode so much. I loved the Thanksgiving episode, which was co-written by his friend
Lena Swaite.
I thought that was a really great episode. And like he actually did some of the dramatic stuff really well in that, whereas when he was being dramatic in the like in the scenes with Francesca, I was just like, shut up. He just has this puppy dog face. And it reminds me too much of either him or Tom Haverford, his character in Parks and Rec.
I
couldn't
couldn't disassociate.
I see too much. Maybe that's my own hang-ups. Maybe I just see too much of him.
I think there is heaps of him.
Yeah.
It is basically him. Like, it's his parents too. His parents are the best thing in the show as well.
Yeah, I loved the scene of his dad when he makes him come and visit him at work. And then he's like, shows him the collection of things that he takes after he removes them from feet. And then he's like, no, if they get out of their butt, they have to keep it. It's so funny. Yeah. And I thought his dad was like way funnier this season than last season.
Yeah.
His dad was clearly loving it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And lots of things that I liked from last season. Like I liked the episode that was about him eating bacon a lot. And his cousin. That was a good episode. But I couldn't stand how saccharine the first episode was in Italy.
The one that's based on the bicycle thief.
I just like with the kid and like him. I just found that like there are like people always go on about like how bad his parents are as actors, but there were moments where I was like, everyone in this show is a terrible actor.
Aziz isn't a great actor, but I like it. Like it's kind of. It's kind of charming in a way, I guess. Like, I don't find it that it takes me out of the show. And I kind of love how bad his parents are at acting. Like, I think his dad got really good this
really
season.
Good.
But his mum is quite stiff and stuff. But I think it's still good. And I think it makes the show more...
genuine.
Yeah, more genuine. And yeah, exactly.
Do you know one of the alternate endings for the season was that maybe the girl in the first episode would... Like, they would come together back. Or
something. Yeah, I was expecting that to happen.
Because there's a lot of still exploring that and how that changes and the back and forward,
Yeah.
But really I was good. Like, just go to the restaurant and ask for her details. Because he was like, I can't contact her because the number's on my phone and it's been stolen. And I would just be like, just go to the restaurant and go like...
And that's her booking number, the first episode. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And also, she made a booking for like a month from then. So maybe she would have...
Yeah, you knew exactly when. Yeah. And
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah, you could have.
Did you like the ending where it suddenly shoots forward and you see a split second of Francesca in bed with Aziz? Because I thought it was a flashback and then...
Was it the same night?
It's a different night. They're wearing different things.
I thought it was like later in the night she actually came back. Like Aziz was already in bed and then he wakes up next to her because she came back.
It's like sometime in the future. Because they said it's not a dream sequence.
Yeah, I didn't think it was a dream sequence, but I didn't realize like it was time ahead. I thought it was the same night, like the morning after. She didn't leave. She came back to Aziz and you just see her the morning after.
Because I was like, I hate where this is going. And then it didn't happen and I hated all that. And I was like, you know what? It's over. It's done. That's fine.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's wrapped it up and then suddenly he's just in bed. And I'm like, what? Nothing was learned.
get what you want. Get what you want, Aziz. Go for it.
Yeah. But I think the food, the insights into the food world in this season, I thought were really good. And totally something that I would love to see explored more. I love the Tinder episode.
Yeah, it's really good.
Like, you know, I can't...
At Four Horsemen.
Yeah, totally. Actually, the ramen place that they eat at in that one episode of BFFs, whatever they recorded, I've eaten there before.
Yeah,
and my sister took me when I was in Williamsburg with her. I just think like I think that the food element is definitely something that I would love to see continue to get bigger and bigger in this in that series.
I heard an interview where Aziz said that people go, "I wish that cupcake show exists," and he's like, "It actually does." There's apparently a cupcake show that's totally like that, and the white people always win.
Do you know what's depressing about that is how bad the Jabberwockies are now. You know, the dance, the B-boy
dance dancers?
Troupe. Yeah, they won like America's Got Talent and shit. They were huge back in the... You didn't know that?
I thought that was a joke.
Yeah, no, they're like, they were, and they used to be really good. Maybe I was just younger, but they were huge. And now they're so bad, and they do NBA halftime shows and shit now. And it's like, oh
man, that's hilarious. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Well, so what is this, Death Castle, a real movie as well?
Cedric the Entertainer is real funny as the magician in and the cupcake episodes too.
Oh, that was Cedric the Entertainer. Yeah, that's awesome. Entertainer.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a great episode too. Yeah. So yeah, good season. There were definitely moments that I wish weren't as prevalent in them. It felt like it was bookended by the things I hated the most about the season, with heaps of great stuff in the middle. I don't regret watching it. That's for sure.
It's really fun. It's really funny as well.
I hated that the second last episode was fucking an hour long.
I can't remember. I watched it so long ago.
So any other food related comedies that I should try and watch 3 years after you did?
No, I haven't really watched much food related stuff lately. No, there hasn't been much out. There's still the little cheeky half hour things on Netflix that keep popping up, the Japanese things and samurai, but I haven't been watching them.
Yeah. I asked my wife shortly after we finished watching Master of None season 2, because it's very similar in theme with the other shows that are run by comedians or people in the comedy industry that do a show with a character that's semi-set on them. So Louis and Atlanta and Master of None. Rank them. How do you go?
Have you seen Atlanta? Have you watched Atlanta?
Oh, man, you watched Atlanta.
So by default, it's Master of None at number one.
Have you watched Louis?
I've watched a bit of Louis, but it's, I can
I can get away. It's way more
I think for me, it's Atlanta and then Louis, then Master of None.
Yeah, but Master of None's still a good show. But
yeah. Louis, Master of None is more enjoyable than Louis, but Louis's genius. And Atlanta is the best of both worlds. It's fucking hilarious. It's amazing.
You'd love Atlanta.
It's so good.
Yeah, you should watch it.
It was one of the best shows, like if not the best show last year.
Best, right off topic, but who gives a fuck? What's best show you've watched this year so far?
I think Master of None would be up there. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Fargo season 3 was pretty good. It wasn't as good as season 2.
It was very, very different.
Yeah. I watched Better Call Saul, but it's not amazing. It's just enjoyable. I've started season 2 of Preacher, which is really fun. I'm surprised you don't like it.
I've watched that the pilot episode. I know you should give more than an episode, but it's like,
you got to watch
that pilot's so fucking bad.
You got to watch more. Season 2 is really
just
good.
The comics, which I love.
Yeah, I don't have a relationship with the comics.
Are anything but boring, and it was so baffling to me that the first episode could be so boring.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. But Game of Thrones today, baby.
Oh, you guys can talk about that. I've never watched an episode of Game of Thrones.
Fuck.
All right, well, that is it for the episode. Unless you got some more TV shows you want to shout out.
Any emails or anything, Libs?
We got an email that just said our podcast was good and the others weren't. The end. You can send us an email, themitchinpodcast@gmail.com, and you can find us online, facebook.com/themitchin, where you can find episodes online at our YouTube page as well.
And just if there's anyone you want to hear from or want us to have on, tell us too.
Especially if they're not a dude.
Anytime we have to do less work, it's good for us.
You can find us on Instagram too, at themitchin. We're on the individually at Instakrill and at Levdog, and Lee Tran Lam at Lee Tran Lam is where you can find.
You can eat a sandwich named after me now.
What the fuck?
Where? What?
There's a sandwich named after me.
Why keep that in the, talk about burying the lead?
Okay. It's at Saga in Enmore, which is Andy Bowdy's cafe.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's so I would always go there and get the charred broccoli and parmesan focaccia. And they kind of turned that into a sandwich. So apparently that's why they named it after me. But it was funny. I went to eat it. It was really good. So it's fermented chili mayo, charred broccoli, a cheese that I'm going to mispronounce.
And it's called the Lee Tran?
It's called the Lee Tran.
The master of buns.
But it was funny. So I was eating it. And these people I didn't know were sitting around me. And they're like, that looks really good. What is it? And I'm like, oh, it's a sandwich named after me. I just felt really embarrassed.
So arrogant. So arrogant.
That's so good. Amazing. And of course, make sure you check out Lee Tran's podcast, The Unbearable Lightness of Being Hungry. Who was your most recent guest?
Nikki Toe, who's photographed the best picture ever taken of Mitch. But also,
would you believe it's a photo of Mitch sitting on his phone
in black and white? It's very, very arty.
But I just recorded one literally an hour ago with Clayton Wells. So,
Thermometer. Awesome.
Yeah, that'll be next.
Make sure you go check that out. Thanks so much for listening, and we will see you next week.
Peace.
When you got a girl who takes her time, you must hold the pace, you can't mess with her mind. She feels the same, she'll let you know. Just prepare yourself and be ready to go. And I hope this message stays in your mind, cause you almost lost a girl who was right on time. Here's one more thing that you got to know. Just cool it down and stay in control.
Cool it down.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.